are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and I am joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig. How are you doing today, Uncle Dig?
Man, I'm doing great. The sun is shining, and there's a nice breeze, so it's still cool this morning.
Yeah, I tell you what, Dig, I was listening back to our last episode, and I heard you mention that you had like some big, massive plants coming on, and now it's flowering season. But I think we've gone this whole year, and you haven't told us like about some of your strains and what actually you have going on there. So just take a minute and share with the audience what you have going on. And I have to tell you, man, I'm just a little jealous. It's not just me, but up here in Washington, some folks struggling with outdoors because of our weather and everything. But what you got going on down there, Dig?
Okay. Well, let's start from the smallest pot to the biggest pot. Let's do it that way.
Yeah.
So I've got a 20-gallon pot that has an Amnesia Haze seedling in that. That seedling's not my tallest. She's probably about 6.5 feet tall. She's I would say an early mid flower. I think the Amnesia Haze is gonna flower a lot longer than my other girls. So I don't know exactly when she's gonna be harvested outdoors. I've never grown her before, but I'm really excited. I've also got another seedling from the same group of seeds in a 30-gallon. It's not much taller, but is much more spread out like a candelabra. So when she's in a bigger container, she produced more like lateral branching. She didn't really get that much taller. And then I have two CBD varieties this year. I'm growing the CBD Dutch Treat, which if longtime listeners are going to remember, I've grown it every year for the past 2 or 3 years. It's a 2-to-1. It's an 8% CBD, a 4% THC variety that I generally smoke in the morning. This year's plant is very big. She's probably 7.5 feet tall, very broad, structured the way you like to see it, a big ball of bud. She's, I would say, also an early to mid flower, although a little bit earlier than the Amnesia Haze. And then I have my first year growing her because I've heard she's a little finicky. Canatonic, knock on wood, I haven't had any issues with powdery mildew or mold. I know that's been a problem with Canatonic. Now, Canatonic is a 1-to-1. Mm-hmm. So she should put anywhere from 7 to 10% THC and CBD across the board. Now, she's in solid mid-flower. She is bulking up. And I have started feeding her the mid-flower nutrient. She's getting very, very big, but not super fragrant. I'm interested to see what she's going to smell like here in a couple of weeks. And then I also have my first time growing a plant like this. I've got Northern Lights. And the Northern Lights is probably my second tallest plant. She's an early flower. And she's probably 7 feet 8 inches, I think, last time I measured her. And she's doing very well. She smells sweet. And I think she's going to flower a little bit longer than some of the other plants. And then I have two other very special seedlings in my outdoor photo period garden this year. I have two Fire of Maroof plants. Fire of Maroof is a cross between Aga Black, which is an Afghan landrace, and Fire OG, which is a very potent OG strain of marijuana. I have two phenotypes of this. I have popped 5 seeds. 3 of them were female. 1 female seedling I gave away, and a friend of mine is growing. And the 2 that I kept are number 5 and number 2. Number 5 is a little over 8 feet tall and has just started flowering. And number 2 is in a 45-gallon smart pot and is, I think she just cleared 8 feet the other day. And she, I think, may have just started showing pre-flowers. So we're doing very well in the garden this year. And I've also started some autoflowers that I'm going to try to rush through for the end of the outdoor season. I've got an Afghan Kush, a blackberry, a candy cane, and 2 big bud autoflowers that I'm pretty excited about. And those I'm hoping to have finished by the end of November.
Nice, nice. And this is why Oregon and California have some of the best medical laws in the country, because you can grow like that. And, you know, that's about as much as you need for a whole year a solid medical patient. You know what I mean? So it's really great to hear that that's working out for you, Dig. And I've had some grows like that in the past, but the past couple of years are kind of floundering. But we'll try to get back on it next year.
And now let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
We're going to kind of jump right into our news, and this is why we need home grows. And so here in Washington State, and we're going to get into some adult use states, and I don't think that any of the states that we're about to talk about that are going to get adult use, I don't think home grow is actually in the cards on any of these. So that is real disappointing. But we're going to talk about some states that might be coming on with adult use cannabis this year, and one state that's going to be coming on with medical, possibly. So our first state we're going to talk about real quick, and we're just going to be mentioning the state, and then just real quick, do we think it's going to pass?
Yeah.
And move on to the next one. So the first one is Maryland. I do think it's going to pass in Maryland because the polls are real high, and it does have a medical system that's been going for a while, although it is an East Coast state that is – I feel like it could maybe go either way in Maryland, but I'm leaning towards it passing.
I think if it fails, it's going to pass on the vote, and then they're going to figure out a way to legally challenge it and overturn it in the courts. Like, because it says in this article right here that there's a legal challenge involving the ballot title that may cause the vote not to be counted. And that's what a lot of how a lot of these referendums are defeated is through like legal shenanigans on the back end through the court systems. Because remember, I mean, all judges are like superpowered cops, so they don't like cannabis. So they're going to do anything in their power to stop it.
Yeah, and Maryland has really struggled with their medical cannabis system. But let's get on to the next state, which is North Dakota. I don't think this is going to pass, but I think it's really great that they actually got it onto the ballot.
Yeah, way to fight the good fight. Yeah, I think it's going to be a few more years before states like North Dakota are going to legalize. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'm always happy to be wrong, but I don't think it's their year yet.
Yeah, they got to keep working at it. But really great to see states like that, because they're even way further than like Alabama or some of the other more conservative states down south. They haven't even come close to even thinking about getting an adult use. So great job, North Dakota. Next up is going to be Missouri. Missouri, I think, is going to pass because they got a booming medical cannabis system, and they also now they've struggled trying to get it onto the ballot. So, like you just said, the powers that be are trying to fight it everywhere they can, and this too could get hung up in the courts after, because I know their medical system's still got some court cases going on and things. So, I think Missouri will pass, but it will take a while to get it implemented.
Yeah, and I would say I have family in Missouri, and I would love for it there to be a lot of ease of cannabis access out there.
And then the next state is Arkansas, and I think this is going to sail right through, and I also don't think it's going to be a lot of challenge to it, because Arkansas has a medical cannabis system that seems to be ticking along just fine. And I tell you, it's going to be interesting, because think about Arkansas is like,
that's Walmart.
Yeah, but think about it like Colorado. So you remember when Colorado legalized, you had states like Oklahoma and Texas and everybody complaining because everybody was driving from wherever to go to Colorado to get lots of cannabis. Well, now Arkansas is going to legalize. Think about all the states around there. It's just going to be like,
if Missouri and Arkansas legalize cannabis, I cannot wait to have my stoned Ozarks vacation. Can I get a yee-yee?
I mean, it's going to be crazy because people will be driving from all over the Southeast. I mean, if you want to invest in something, get your hotel between the Gulf Coast and Missouri, because people are going to be driving back and forth. And I feel like it's just going to open it up, because you got Illinois right there, and I think that's going to be great. So Arkansas will pass. And then the last state is Nebraska, and they're not going adult use, although they have tried to get something on there, but it's going to be they're trying to get a medical on there, and that also have been battling with the medical ballot.
Well, they're having some state election issues too. There's something called a geographic distribution for where the signatures have to come from in Nebraska, and it looks like there's some they're doing that thing on the back end again. So I don't know if it's actually going to show up on the ballot.
Yeah, it might not, because they challenged the geographic distribution signature thing. And then one more adult use state is Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, as we know and we've talked about, was just going crazy with the medical system. They really just opened it up and let everybody get licenses, which was good and bad, turned out. But I think Oklahoma will definitely pass adult use.
I think you're right, Lucas. I actually am on a podcast that's based out of Oklahoma called Bong Loads and BS. And they have been kind of following this. Not they don't follow politics to the degree we do on this program, but they've been talking about this. And there's a lot of concern in the Oklahoma medical program that they're going to kind of get left out to dry once the legalization comes through. So I hope that's not the case. But again, I've got family in this part of the world, and I would really like these places to have open access.
Yeah, it really would be great if we get some more access. And actually, I don't have it on here, but I think just a real quick update. I saw in Alabama's medical system is coming on, and they're about to open up and send out licenses down there. So this is really great to open it up. But, you know, we just really need the police to lay off and stop arresting people and throwing people in prison, home grows. So that's all what we're going for. But it's really great that these states are moving forward. Now, we're going to move on to our next story, which is out of New York City. And this is something that is interesting, and this is going to be an investment made by a Las Vegas club owner, and he is going to open up a cannabis museum in New York City. Now, he said he leased a building on the corner of Broadway and Howard for 10 years, and it's three floors. They're going to revamp the whole place, and they're going to tell the story of cannabis. And it's really going to be interesting how they do that. I'm be interested to see what angle they take on that.
Yeah, I've looked into some cannabis cultural centers or museums before. I think there's one in Vegas that kind of sounds like this kind of a similar concept where there's light shows and like art exhibits. And to be honest, I don't know if that's what we need. I would like to see someone somewhere, and listen, I do not want it to be me, but someone somewhere curate some real artifacts and really teach people about cannabis, not a light show and isn't it cool, man. Like, have a display that shows how hashish used to be made on the, in the Fertile Crescent and whatever, and then move on from there. You could do so many things with cannabis that's educational, that's enriching, that it might sound stuffy, but like a museum about cannabis, not some trippy, hippie, Grateful Dead nonsense.
Yeah, because there's kind of already a lot of that out there.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, the cannabis culture is alive and well, and we love it.
I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying I want a museum that's a little drier.
Yeah. We love the cannabis culture. I do, Grateful Dead, all that. But the thing is, I wonder how they're going to approach it from some points of view, the story of cannabis in the 20th century is like a bomb going off. If you're in the black community or if you're in other communities, it's not always a happy story. And,
right.
And going all the way back when the British medical journals started turning against cannabis in like 1890s, and then all the state laws and the racist things started coming out all through the 20s and the teens and everything. I mean, it's a very, very complex story. And I just really hope that they look through it through that social equity lens. And,
see, you bring up such an interesting point. See, this is what we're talking about, could be like a living cannabis museum on the Smithsonian, and it could have like a whole like wing devoted to police harassment and how the community survived it.
Yeah.
You know, you could have like an interactive like exhibit where you try to find the stash jar in the car full of trash. And I don't know, you could do all kinds of fun stuff with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you could get really in there, like, what was the drug war all about? Yeah, and that's real interesting that we could really talk about the drug war, and that's kind of moving into our next two stories are kind of dealing with the drug war. And the first one is out of Oakland, California, and this involves involves a church, the Zirndor Entheogenic Plant Church. And they were in Oakland. And in 2019, Oakland actually decriminalized psychedelics. So they basically said you could not get arrested for psychedelics. Right after that, this church opened. And they are based on the fact that they say that mushrooms sort of helped spur on religion to begin with. And then cannabis today helps you understand life in the context of religion. And so they use those two things together, and they were raided. They said they had $200,000 worth of cannabis stolen by the police and $50,000 in damages, and they are finally taking the Oakland PD to court.
You know, this is complex because the whole argument of this church is religious freedom, right? And, you know, drugs... You know, we don't normally talk about this on the show, but real quick, drugs, entheogenic plants, right? Plants that alter your mind can be a spiritual, like, gateway. They can help you feel more spiritual and stuff. And that threatens the power structure that exists in this country. And so churches like this are viewed as dangerous. So the state lashes out. And also, there are a couple churches like this that have exemptions federally to use substances that are normally illegal. One of them is the Native American Church with peyote,
mm-hmm.
and the other is this church, and I think there's a few others. But you're always on tenuous ground with that, right? Because any local law enforcement can do what they want to you. And then you still have to sue them and do a bunch of stuff to hold them accountable for breaking the law and violating your rights. So the accountability really isn't two ways. That's why we need to legalize these substances and remove law enforcement's ability to interact with us because of these substances. Only then will we have religious freedom, and will we have the freedom to take these substances without interference from coercive forces.
And now for our last story, and that's, we're staying on the idea of the drug war. And this story is basically that the new president of Colombia, President Petro, has basically raised the white flag on the drug war. He has said that the drug war has failed. And they basically say there's no way they've been able to take the territory back that they've been trying to take back from people that are selling cannabis and other drugs. So the idea is to legalize it, bring them into the fold. And they made a little crack there and a little dig on the United States there, Dig. What did the president say there that kind of caught your attention?
Oh, yeah. He said that even America, like the biggest and most technologically advanced country in the world, couldn't win the drug war. Which I thought was an interesting thing that he said. They've already kind of got a legal cannabis industry that they've set up. And you and I have been talking about Colombia's cannabis industry on this show for at least this season. And I think we mentioned it last season, mm-hmm. too. We were saying that they're going to be leading global exports of cannabis in a way that we won't because of the way that their regulatory bodies are embracing this. So they're going to be ahead of the game on this. They're also doing some very interesting stuff in the cultivation sector. And, you know, of all of the cannabis cultivation, like, foreign countries that I would be super interested in visiting the farms. Now, I'm not saying I want to go to Colombia, right? That's a loaded thing. But I'm really interested in how they're cultivating there, given the different conditions. You know, it's not temperate. It's very humid. I'm just interested. I'm curious, you know?
Yeah, they have a 12-12 cycle already with the light, and so they can get bigger and longer growing seasons throughout the year. So it would be really interesting to go and checking out Colombia.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
And we are back for this week's interview, and this week we are joined by the CTO of Grinco Science, Michael Trzeszewski, and he is here to talk to us about some things going on in the vaporizer world, some things going on at Grinco Science, and some other things going on out there in the cannabis world. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing very well, Lucas. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, great to have you here. And before we get started, just give us a little bit about yourself and your background.
As we recover, my name is Michael Trzeciewski. It's a good old Polish name, and I'm the Chief Technology Officer of Granco Science. And my background is in engineering physics, as well as I'm also a patent agent. So from a strong technical background, I believe in innovation in the company. And so, our company has worked with, leading artists, musicians, and key players in the cannabis scene. And I'm sure, as you know, we were the first to have a collaboration with Snoop Dogg in our first vaporizer. And that collaboration has allowed us to build some of the strongest relationships in the industry.
So I actually had that Snoop Dogg vaporizer, Granco Science Snoop Dogg version. It was the first vaporizer I ever had. I actually bought it from a friend of mine. And now I've tried just recently Dr. Green Thumb vaporizer, and there is a big difference. And I just wanted to ask you real quick, just from your standpoint, how has the vape industry changed in the past 10 years?
Well, it's a good question. I think it has a lot to do with consumer demands. Through the social media and a lot of people offering their feedback, a lot of manufacturers had to really rein in what their products were all about and to really look at how do we put the best technology and best customer experience forward, because people are not willing to buy substandard products anymore. And through improvements in manufacturing, through improvements in safety of materials, through a lot more transparency in the supply chain, consumers now want to have high quality products, and they also want to have high quality products for a very good price. So I think gone are the days of, where the vaporizer smells like rubber when you inhale from it. Gone are the days of things getting burnt and substandard heating. Consumers are spending a lot of money on their extracts or their cannabinoid materials, and they're not going to want to use it from a substandard product, because it's like, it's a big waste. If you're going to consume an expensive extract from a poor vaporizer, then you might as well not consume it at all, because you're just going to waste your time and money. And also, your health's important too. So, in terms of, offering better technology for consumption, that's something that's really important. And that's where, GPen is very strong in improving technology and consumer experiences.
Tell us a little bit about your design and innovation philosophy.
So I believe that we should be creating world-class products. Our team is composed of industry experts from a user experience perspective to product design to product functionality. Now, a lot of our products and the team that in the company believes that we should be creating products that are world-class, that offer the best experiences possible for the consumer, and in creating something that doesn't exist, and to really upping the bar and pushing innovation. There's a lot of products that we do create that we never launch because they never make it past the rigorous standards we have internally. So we may create, five or six products, and we'll release one or two of those, or sometimes none, because we believe in really pushing the customer experience forward and making sure that we release the best products out there for a unique customer experience.
So in the past, I've noticed that GPen has created a lot of products sort of tailored towards recreational users. What is your company's outlook on the medical patients?
We believe that the medical market is obviously a very large market and growing day by day. Medical patients are obviously very important because there's recreational, of course, but medical people take it for medication. They have a set schedule where they want to consume their medication. They have certain types of medication they want to consume. So we believe in the medical sector, what's important is dosing, to have an understood dose by the patient, as well as data collection. So one of our newer vaporizers, the Elite 2, for example, has a capability which we'll be releasing soon that has dosage tracking, where you can now track how often you've used your vaporizer, when you've used it, the temperature you used it at. You can now look at your dosage, usage frequency, and then you can potentially at that point look at your effectiveness, where you can now have a digital logbook with your product and understand what my consumptive patterns are like, how am I consuming, and then through that kind of tracking and logging, you can look at, is my medication having the desired effect that I want it to have, or how could I alter my medication to have a desired effect, which means through the tracking and the logging, you're able to then determine whether it has the proper outcome. I think that's where people, you know, a lot of people have Fitbits and Apple Watches, and it's all about tracking and data, where that doesn't quite really exist in the vaporizer space yet. And we're looking at how do we bring such innovation into this space so that people can really get granular with their medication.
Well, as a medical patient, that would really help me out a lot if I could track my medicine and keep track of some of that information and compare it and make graphs. And in fact, a lot of people say when you first starting using medical cannabis, that's a technique they tell people, say keep track of what you're smoking and how you're smoking it to kind of tell whether your medicine's working. So next up, I want to ask you, there are a lot of vaporizers out there. I have just noticed an explosion in the different vaporizers out there. And they all seem to be kind of claiming the same thing, conduction, convection, and they're getting the new bowls and everything. So what is the importance of intellectual property in the vaporizer space?
I mean, generally speaking, intellectual property is, you know, is very important. And my background as a patent agent, you know, I strongly believe in intellectual property and in protecting what you design and what you innovate. There's a lot of players in the market that will take somebody else's product, put their name on it and say, hey, this is mine. And they basically just try to market it saying it's their product. But, you know, it's easy just to rip somebody off and say, hey, this is my product. And you know, I'm gonna use it for my own purposes. But innovation and research and development costs money. So we strongly believe in putting money and efforts towards research and development, as well as in protecting what we design and develop and engineer through design patents, through utility patents, through trademarks, because that's where you really build a brand, is through, you know, fantastic products as well as consumer following, but also through the intellectual property side, where you protect your designs, you protect your IP, you protect your innovations. And, you know, that way when infringers or copycats come around, you can then go and use your IP to shut down copycats. I think that's really important, where in this industry right now, especially in the cannabis industry, there hasn't really been a lot of intellectual property enforcement. And I think that's where things are going to really change in the next 10 years, is that companies are going to start enforcing their IP, as GPEN does, to make sure that, you know, we're getting rewarded for what we create, and that our innovations are, you know, well received by the consumers and that they aren't copied.
There's a lot of devices out there, Grinko Science. Which one have you engineered that you're the most proud of, and what's to come with that?
I mean, through Grinko Science, I was at a company called Vapium, which then merged with Grinko Science a few years back. And at Vapium and Higher, we created a product called Higher Biggie, which was a concentrated vaporizing device. So it was an attachment where a battery unit would attach to a heating chamber that would attach to a glass bowl that really offered a full glass-on-glass experience for consuming extracts. And you know, this product might have been, you know, had some, it did have a bit of issues, obviously. But it did win us the Cannabis Cup, and that was something fantastic. And I really truly believe that it was, you know, very innovative at the time. And so now we're going to be launching that product in the Higher Connect, and that'll be launching sometime in Q4 or Q1 next year. And the Higher Connect brings a beautiful e-nail experience with fantastic heating and taste and flavor profiles. So you can attach this to any existing water pipe and really have a very pleasurable way of enjoying your extracts.
As I was saying, I've noticed just an explosion with vaporizers out there, and I've kind of predicting in 10 years you're going to be just able to flip a switch and just poof, vaporizes your stuff in like a second. And as an engineer, what are some things on the horizon you are seeing coming up in the vaporizer space?
I believe that, you know, some of the things that are coming up is definitely innovative heating technologies. There are companies that are pursuing heating technologies, obviously through convection, conduction, but then there's, for example, various technologies that resonate, like inductive heating. You know, that's something that some companies are pushing, which is, you know, I think it's unique. It's definitely different. So I think from the taste perspective, you know, consumers are going to demand better tasting, which means temperature feedback will be important to ensure that, you know, the material is going to be heated at the right temperature and not have a heater overrun and then material gets burnt, for example, or the taste gets altered. You know, I believe too, in terms of innovation, I think there's going to be more smart devices and more connected devices and things where people can like track their usage patterns. I think that's going to be something really important too.
Well, it's really great to have you on the show today, Michael. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with today?
No, Lucas, I mean, I really appreciate being on the show here. I mean, I think we covered a lot of great things, and I look forward to hearing the podcast.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
And now we're going to get on to our It's a Bus segment. And this week we are heading to Nevada, and they busted a basically hoop house complex. And they're using some interesting tactics these days to bust these folks, Dig. It's not always the cannabis is illegal. It is you're messing up the stream and you're damaging the environment.
Yeah, it seems like this started with a water use complaint. And, you know, like you've got a water meter on your property a lot of times or whatever, and if they notice it spikes, and this is a significant spike, we're talking about, you know, over 11,000 individual cannabis plants. That's a lot of water. For a reference, I'm looking at a picture of where the supposed site was. It looks like their plants are towards the top of the hoop houses. If the hoop houses are 8 feet tall, those plants are about 6 feet tall from the bottom of the pot. So each plant needs about 6 gallons of water per day.
Mm.
Easy, right? Maybe more in Nevada, right? So this is a very water-intensive crop to be growing outdoors in Nevada, one would think.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I would like to point to the listener and to everyone that while these laws or these other laws like water use laws and stuff are being used to enforce against cannabis cultivation, you also need to realize that this is a problem across agriculture, not just in the cannabis space. So while they are pointing at this grow, right, and that they're doing all these environmentally problematic things, just upstream, there's probably a grape orchard doing the same thing and no one cares. So it's just important to keep in mind that while we may be pointing a finger at cannabis for having inefficient or bad agricultural practices, you could largely take those practices and spread them across agriculture as a whole in the United States. So I would encourage people to remember that.
Yeah, one of the first articles I ever wrote for cannabis back in 2014 on a site called Weed Gear that no longer exists. I pointed out the environmental damage of cannabis, and I was told that exact same thing, that, hey, man, cannabis is not doing anything close to, let's say, a almond or a grape farm or even something like a frack, somewhere fracking. So I don't want to camp for cannabis farms that are taking too much water, but let's talk about some of the environmental good cannabis can do, which it is a thing. And yeah, so let's hold everybody accountable to those water usage things, but just the war on drugs is still going on, and they just contacted 3 people there, which is telling me that's just the workers. So very interesting things coming out of Nevada, and we are about to get out of here. I'd like to thank the audience for listening. I'd like to thank Michael Trzeszewski for coming on the show of Grinko Science, and I'd also like to thank you, Dig, for coming on the show this week.
Oh, yeah, I always have a great time. Thanks for having me, Lucas.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Folsch for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.